All right, welcome back to another episode of This Week in College Football. I'm here with my co-host, Sonny Martinez. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to your podcast. Today we have a lot to talk about. I can't believe it's February, and we are still going through the coaching carousel. Sonny, how are you?
Good, man. How you been?
I am good. It's been a while since our last episode, I think 2 weeks. It is the offseason, but with the amount of news coming in, it does not feel like the offseason.
Yeah, no, February is usually a dead period in college football, and the fact that we're still going through not just the coaching carousel, there's a major opening in college football right now.
There is a major opening as of, what, yesterday, I believe?
Yesterday afternoon.
But this is the man we got to start with. Jim Harbaugh wins the national championship, a Michigan man, and then he says, college thing's not for me anymore.
I think the college thing was for him. He just knew he was going to get the hammer dropped on him because of all the other allegations he has against him. I think he knew that there was a suspension coming, possibly something more, and he just wanted to get out of town before anything could happen.
Yeah, well, he's no stranger to being suspended. That's for sure. That's definitely not something he
is he the first college football coach in history to start the season and finish the season with a suspension that wasn't the same?
That's a great trivia question. You got to find the answer to that.
Two completely different suspensions, one to start the year, one to end the year. He's got to be the first one to ever do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy that he, out of their 15 wins, he only coached 9 of them. That is pretty incredible. That's 6 of their games. A whole bowl eligible season he missed this year. 6 whole games.
That's crazy. Crazy.
Yeah, so how do you feel about this move? I mean, the Chargers, I know we're not really a big NFL guys, but we do touch on it a little bit. You think they were a good fit for him?
Yeah, I think Harbaugh is, in general, more of an NFL guy than a college guy. And there's nothing wrong with that. Obviously, we saw he can win at the college level. He's going to be a great coach no matter what level he goes to. If he decides he wants to go to the Canadian League next year, he's going to dominate there as well. But I think he's going to be stronger in the NFL. He's already got a lot of good tools at his disposal there. He's got Justin Herbert. He's got some solid names on defense there. He needs some help along the lines. And just they made a lot of baffling decisions over the last couple of years that Harbaugh's going to have to write. And I think he can do this quickly.
Yeah. So you said something that interests me. I don't think he's necessarily a college guy or an NFL guy. I think his brand of football and coaching, kind of like how you said, it'll travel anywhere. Good defense and a run game is good football at any level.
That's very true also.
And like you said, he has Justin Herbert. There's some guys on that Chargers defense. There's worse jobs he could take. I'm kind of glad he didn't go to a team like the Raiders. He went to a team where he has a young quarterback he could work with, and there's a defense in place. If they bring back Austin Ekeler or bring in Saquon Barkley, they could have a great season.
Yeah, I was worried he was going to go to a team like the Falcons, and then he'd just be screwed, but like the Chargers, that's a place where he can excel. He's already got the guys there. He just needs to teach them how to, you know, properly use their talents. It's no different. I look at this as the way Jacksonville was under Urban Meyer. Like, you can have a guy come in, and then the next season they're going to surprise some people. Hopefully without the collapse that Jacksonville had this year. Yeah. But there's no reason the Chargers can't make a wild card next year.
Yeah, I think so too. Like I said, I think he's probably one of the best coaches in football, I think. You know, I'm a 49ers fan, so obviously big day for me tomorrow, but Jim Harbaugh has a special place in my heart. I mean, the years with Colin Kaepernick and stuff, that was a special time, so I do wish him well. Now on to Michigan. They go with Sharon Moore, and I think that's a good hire. I think off a national championship, you got to keep some familiarity in the program. A lot of the coaches did leave, but having a familiar voice leading the program next season is going to be important for them.
And I don't even think it's that he's familiar to them. I think it's that he was the guy that stepped in when Harbaugh was gone. And the way the players there rallied around him, that tells you everything you need to know. Now, that's not an indication that he's going to be, you know, as successful as Harbaugh was. He might get to 10 wins every year, and that's still not a national championship level. But you saw what the players thought of him and what they would do for him. And his reaction, I think it was after the Penn State game, where he was actually in tears on the field after the interview. Like, that's a coach that loves his team, loves his players. That's someone that people are going to want to play for, especially at a time when Michigan State's so down. They're on the upswing now with Jonathan Smith coming in, but Moore could use a little bit of that energy and emotion to maybe sway a couple more guys that would have went to Michigan State normally.
Yeah, you're right about that. And the one thing I wanted to touch on here is, like you said, Sherrone Moore, he coached six games this season. You know, those six games Harbaugh missed, someone had to coach them. And he beat good schools, you know, Penn State, he beat Maryland, and then he outcoached Ryan Day, which debatably is hard. I'm not the biggest Ryan Day guy. Yeah, so debatably is an accomplishment. But if he didn't have good performances himself, Michigan's not getting that national championship game.
Yeah, I mean, what happens if they get blown out by, or not even blown out, but by a team like Penn State, whose offense was a disaster at that time? I'm not too sure Moore gets that job. Or if it's a really close game early in the year and against East Carolina, which I don't think he coached that one. I think that was split between Mike Hart and the defensive coordinator. I know there was one game that was like that.
Yeah, yeah. So but, I think it is that one, because right here it says Moore served as oh, wait. So, he was suspended too, was he? No way. No,
I don't think he was suspended.
No, I think this is wrong. Wikipedia is not right. But this is the only one I think that was split, East Carolina, because the rest of them say Moore served as acting head coach for the third game of the season. So second game, I think it was split.
I don't remember off the top of my head. Was the third game Central Michigan, Western Michigan?
Bowling Green.
Bowling. Okay, I knew it was a MAC team. But yeah, what happens if they go out and they play a close game there and it's not a blowout? What happens if it's, you know, 24-17? Are we having this exact same conversation?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think one thing that tells you a lot when you're hiring a new guy, a guy to replace the guy, because now Jim Harbaugh was the guy. He won a natty, so he is the guy. I feel like the players have to be on board. You can't make a hire from outside the program. And they were all on social media, you know, openly asking for Sherrone Moore to step up.
Yeah, and I think it's we can't judge how Moore does based off of 2024 or 2025. It's once we start getting into year 3 and 4 where it's a program that's totally built in his image, his recruits, his style, all of that. What happens? Because we saw guys like Brady Hoke come in, and he was an overnight success at Michigan, and then look what happened. So let's give Moore a little bit of time before we, you know, say he's going to be a great coach.
Yeah, you're right, because right now, this season and the next season, it's going to be off of Harbaugh's coattails, kind of guys he brought in. In 3 or 4 years, all that Harbaugh flavor will be out of the program. It'll be Sherrone Moore's program.
Yeah, and again, look what Rich Rodriguez did after Lloyd Carr left.
Yeah.
Another guy who I think he took him to, at the time, a BCS bowl, and then he just kind of flamed out.
Yeah, so the next thing I want to talk about, because Michigan, this is 2-week-old news, so I don't want to dwell on it too much, but I just wanted to share my thoughts. I think Sherrone Moore will be successful. I want to pivot to something a little more recent that I can't really believe happened, and I'm itching to talk about it. So let's do that.
Okay.
Chip Kelly. Sorry, I was trying to pull it up, but I typed it wrong. Yeah, Chip Kelly, I want to talk about here. And this is just, I cannot believe he left UCLA. I mean, he doesn't really want to be, I feel like he doesn't like to recruit. And UCLA, you know, losing their 5-star quarterback, I just feel like his heart really wasn't in it. I saw that he didn't get the Cincinnati job last year, but what are your thoughts on this?
All right, you ready for a hot take?
Uh-huh.
I think Chip Kelly left UCLA because he saw the writing on the wall that UCLA is about to become the Vanderbilt of the Big Ten.
You ready for my perspective on that?
Yes.
I don't disagree. I think this program does not commit enough to football to compete in the Big Ten. This is you see this right here? This is Indiana. This screams Indiana for me, this program.
I think they could be a little bit better than Indiana. Not much, but a little bit.
Nope. They're Indiana. That's what I think they're going to be. They're not going to be Northwestern bad, but I think this is going to be 6-7 win season on in their good years.
But it's hard to say Northwestern bad when they've had so many good years in the past. A new coach now, but, you know, no Fitzgerald, but Northwestern's been pretty good. But the problem with UCLA is now they're out playing in the Big Ten. People are still going to choose USC over them. How many times do we see that on the recruiting trail? Now you're going to have California kids that are going to want to play in conference, but in conference now includes Ohio State, Penn State, national champion Michigan. Like, that's a whole new level of, competition. We're no longer talking about Arizona, Arizona State, and Utah, which good programs, especially Utah, but you're going to compare Utah and Ohio State, and more kids are going to want to go to Ohio State, if for nothing else than name brand.
Yeah, I mean, just the Big Ten next season is going to be a gauntlet. I'm so excited to watch it. But you're right. I mean, even on the West Coast now, if you're a kid who, say, you live in Los Angeles, you have, three options on the West Coast in the conference now? You can go to Washington, you can go to USC, or you can go to Oregon.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, all three of them are, I was going to say arguably, but it's not arguably. All three of them are much more committed to having a good football program than UCLA is.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And that's not to say that UCLA can't have success in the Big Ten. I think they can. But it's just a matter of, especially in this NIL era, how much does, like you said, how much does UCLA want to commit? How badly do they really want to win here?
Yeah, and I think another issue with UCLA is just, I think Chip Kelly, while he's a good play caller, I mean, how could I say this? So if you're a team that's not committing the money, right, to NLI and stuff, you need to bring in a guy with energy, something else about your program. You can't bring in a dud of a personality in Chip Kelly, a guy that doesn't like to recruit. You have to mitigate your unwillingness to pay money.
I think Chip Kelly's biggest problem, and it's hard to say this because UCLA's been good under him. They haven't been great under him. But I think Chip Kelly's biggest problem was that when he left for the NFL, the college game caught up to him. And not only caught up to him, kind of passed him by a little bit. Like, you look at a team like Tennessee or, some of those other high-powered offenses out there, and they're doing pretty much what Oregon was doing 10 years ago, just they're doing it better now.
Yeah. I actually saw a tweet earlier today, and I think it was Chip Kelly's offenses at UCLA were actually in the top 10, I think, in certain categories. The last two seasons, which is pretty incredible because they were not the best football teams.
No, they kind of reminded me of like the late 2000s Texas Tech under Mike Leach, where you knew they were going to put up some points on offense, but can the defense keep up and help them out?
Yeah, and that's why I think this will actually be, because I've talked about this before. I'm not a big Ryan Day guy. I say it every time I talk about him, but this is a good hire for him. I actually like this for Ryan Day. Maybe he could take a little bit of his hands off the offense and focus on some of the other things in the program, making sure things are getting done the right way. Because Ohio State, this was a down year for them, but they're still one of the top programs in the country. One down year, if they make the right moves, they can be right back in the title picture this season.
Yeah, and if we're going to look at this from an Ohio State perspective, this might actually be the best hire of the entire coaching cycle here. Now that Chip Kelly doesn't have to worry about defense, which even from his time at Oregon, that was his weakest spot constantly on his teams, were the defense. Mm-hmm. He always had good special teams and a solid offense. Now he can focus just on offense and the pieces he's given. I'm interested to see how he teams up with a guy like Will Howard, who he could put up Marcus Mariota-like numbers this year. Am I crazy for thinking that?
No, not at all. I mean, they have the receivers. They have the pieces. And now if you're Ryan Day, he's an offensive-minded guy, but he can take more of a CEO kind of role now. You have Chip Kelly as your offensive coordinator. He's coached big-time programs before. You can kind of leave the offensive meetings and stuff to him. You could trust him.
Yeah, Day's an offensive-minded guy, which is good, but last year he kind of put a few questions in terms of how good truly is he. They just weren't as strong on offense as they should have been with the quality of talent they had.
I think a little bit of his problem last year actually was the stubbornness to not bench Kyle McCord. I feel like he was just didn't make the move. I feel like he should have at some point. But yeah, you're right. The offense was not great last year. He didn't do himself any favors. But still, they're right in it. They recruit well. They have a great defensive coordinator in Jim Knowles. They have the pieces. It's just they got to get the fit in the puzzle right.
See, I don't know if I agree with that about benching McCord or not. I think they were in a really bad spot where he was too good to bench, but he just wasn't at that Ohio State quarterback level that they've had over the last 10 years.
And that's not even a knock on Kyle McCord. So I'll admit, I called him a future tax man the other day on Twitter, and that was a little harsh on Kyle McCord. That was a little harsh calling him a future tax man. So I'm going to recant that. I'm going to recant that statement now. But, I mean, you're right. The Ohio State quarterbacks in the, you know, the last 10 years, they've all been, for lack of a better word, most of them in the last few years have been stars. I mean, just starting here, Terrell Pryor, Miller, Barrett, Jones, Haskins, Fields, Stroud. And then you throw Kyle McCord in there, and he's not like the rest. One of these is not like the other.
But now that he's at Syracuse, does McCord kind of change that narrative? Because now he's at a place where he doesn't have a quarter of the pressure on him that he had at Ohio State. Do we look back and say, you know, wow, he was actually good, we just didn't give him a chance, or he excelled because there was less pressure? How do we look at him now?
I think he'll actually excel at Syracuse. The pressure will be off him. I mean, when you struggle at Ohio State, people are, you know, your Instagram comments and your Twitter replies, you know, people are bashing you every week. You're on ESPN. You know, you can't get away from your struggles. I feel like at Syracuse,
but that's the thing. I don't think it was that he struggled. I think it just he wasn't up to the level that Ohio State fans have been spoiled by.
So you think he just had like a plain, like a bang average season? It wasn't like a bad year.
I know. I don't think he was a bad quarterback at all. Like I said, he was too good to bench. But he's not C.J. Stroud. He's not J.T. Barrett. But he's good enough that, look, they went 11-1.
I mean, you're not – I see what you're saying. I think maybe – you might be right on this, actually. I may admit that – I mean, he had a – from numbers-wise, he had a good year.
Yeah, we're crushing this guy that he should have been benched and whatever – quarterbacking an Ohio State team that went 11-1. How bad could he have been if they went 11-1? And yeah,
I'm gonna say
there were some games where, yeah, they should have looked better on offense. I think I don't care how good Notre Dame's defense should have played, Ohio State should have steamrolled them. And yeah, that was all on poor offensive play, but it wasn't just him. They couldn't get the run game going either. They went 11-1. That just shows the level of quality you've had at Ohio State. You're going 11-1, and we're talking about the quarterback like he's some third stringer at Furman.
So you know what? You know why I think I had such a bad taste in my mouth about Kyle McCord? Because I'm looking now. So he did have a great year. Looking at this as a Rutgers fan, I'll be honest, 3,000 yards, 24 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. I'd sell a kidney for this stat line right here, okay, at Rutgers. So maybe he's not a future tax man. But I think this being the last game of the season kind of is what made people, you know, the 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and a 1-score loss to Michigan. Now, I think that's kind of why everyone soured on him, because it was a close game. He didn't play his best game. Obviously, they won the national championship, Michigan. But just having that as their last taste in their mouth of McCord, maybe that's why I have felt like he was worse than he was.
That's just it. As an Ohio State fan, your entire career is based off of what you did against Michigan. And if you want an example of that, look at Ryan Day. He's had an excellent record. They've made it to the playoff, but he can't beat Michigan. And because of that and that alone, he's on hot seat.
Yeah, he is, undoubtedly. So now moving on to another program, because I don't want to spend my Saturday bashing Kyle McCord. I feel bad now for my tax man. He probably is great at taxes. But
yeah, leave him alone. He's got till April 15th to figure things out.
Yep. His return is going to be incredible. I can't believe this, though, that Ryan Grubb already leaving Alabama. The stability that Nick Saban brought is it's kind of gone. I mean, they hired this guy, what, two weeks ago?
Yeah, and I don't think anybody was expecting him to leave that quick. You know, maybe they should have stuck with Tommy Rees just for a year, although I don't think he's that good. I think he's a lot of reason that they lost the playoff game, especially if you look at that, whatever the hell they were trying to call in overtime there. But maybe just for stability for a year to get things under you, because Saban kind of retired a little bit late, you know, later than most coaches believe. Alabama needs to go and do something. Now they need a splash hire. And I have a good candidate that I think would be good for him, and that's Zach Kittley from Texas Tech. Explosive offense, can recruit the state of Texas, especially now that you have Texas in the SEC. You need a Texas guy within that program to keep guys coming over. He has all the connections from the high schools out there. I think Kittley would be a great asset at Alabama, but I don't know if he'd be willing to leave Texas Tech right now.
I think Alabama has a chance to do the funniest thing ever. What if they offer this man a nice contract? just a day after he takes the Boston College job. But no, I've actually saw, I'll go back to Alabama in a second. I saw Bill O'Brien's son has some illness that the doctors are in Boston. So that's why he left. I don't know if you've seen that.
But no, I didn't. I hope everything's all right there.
Yeah, I think his son's having seizures, and there's like a neurologist in Boston that they see. So that's why he took the Boston College job. That's where the interest came from. But for Alabama, I don't think they need to make a good hire. I think you let Kalen DeBoer call plays for a year.
I don't know if you want to start off on that foot, though.
I mean, it's definitely a gamble. Because your first year in a big program that's going to demand a lot more time than Washington, and calling your own plays, you're right, would take a lot of time being in the offense meetings and all that stuff. So maybe you're right. Maybe they do need – I actually think the splash higher. I think they can get an average offensive coordinator and kind of split duties, but I think I'd let the board call plays, I think, for a year.
No, I unfortunately disagree. And I touched on it last time. The first time Alabama loses a game this year, I don't care who it's against, the first loss they have, Alabama fans are going to be going nuts saying they made the wrong hire. And if that loss happens to be at Wisconsin where they only score 13 points, what's going to happen then? Alabama fans are just going to go nuts, and they're not even going to give DeBoer a chance.
I mean, the first loss, like you said, it's going to be a meltdown. They're going to be fucking burning. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to. Oh, whatever. they're going to be burning Kalen DeBoer pictures in the street, the first loss they have.
Oh, God, yeah.
There's going to be signs saying, send them back to the North. We don't want this guy. Like, they're not going to be happy the first game they lose.
They go to Wisconsin. They lose. They only score 13 points. I guarantee Kalen DeBoering is trending on Twitter thanks to Alabama fans.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have – I agree. I think that's going to what's going to happen. A good friend of the program, Phil Longo, is going to have an offensive play-calling masterclass in that Wisconsin game. They're going to upset Alabama.
Oh, wow. I don't – okay. Wow.
No, I don't know if that's yours. That's not an official prediction. That's just the Phil Longo hype talking.
Oh, I'm all in on the Phil Longo hype.
All right. So we could talk about the Super Bowl. So like I said, I am a San Francisco 49ers fan. I am extremely nervous tomorrow. I woke up and I washed my Patrick Willis jersey today, and I'm ready to get on. I'm ready to put the cleats on tomorrow. In my living room, Patrick Willis jersey and the cleats.
I don't even know how much of it I'm going to watch. I'm still heartbroken over that Lions loss. I thought I would have rather watched them get blown out. That was just painful.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the Bills were playing tomorrow, but I guess I'm wrong.
Oh, you got to go there now too?
sorry.
It's because once again, we couldn't beat the Kansas City Swifties.
Yep. So actually there's like two or three more things I want to touch on before the Super Bowl. I know we're jumping around here. Steve Belichick at Washington. I kind of love that. I kind of love Steve Belichick at Washington.
I just can't picture a Belichick working in the college realm, but I'm interested to see where that goes. At this point, Wisconsin's got nothing to lose because they've already, Washington has nothing to lose because they've already lost everything. They've been decimated by the transfer portal. So, I mean, worst case, this doesn't work. I think they were kind of looking at a 7 or 8 win season. They were maybe, you know, going to follow in the footsteps of TCU this year, but it's worth a shot.
Yeah, I mean, I like this hire. I think it'll be, like you said, at the very least, it'll be interesting to see how Belichick deals with college kids and, you know, decommitments and stuff. Because if he's anything like his father, he will not be happy the first time a kid flips his commitment.
I don't know too much about his temperament or what he thinks about that kind of stuff, but it's more so just the last name than anything else. I can't see that working.
Yeah, no, yeah, me either. So the other two things I wanted to talk about, one was I wanted to run a thing by you. Do you think Kirk Herbstreit knew Nick Saban was retiring? Because obviously people are saying, you know, Saban joining game day. Did the game day crew know this was coming? And that's why Alabama got in over Florida State. Nick Saban's like last ride.
Well, I think it would take a lot more than Kirk Herbstreit to know. I don't think he's going to single-handedly influence decisions like that. No, I don't, because from what I understand about Saban, from people close to him, he's very keep things close to his vest kind of guy. So I don't think he knew. I would honestly be shocked if, like, you know, his wife was the only person that knew, and that was only like a week or two before he even announced anything.
You think she knew?
I think she knew, yeah, but I don't think she knew. I wouldn't be surprised if we found out she knew, you know, that early.
I think, so I don't know, because I saw something when this first happened that, like, Saban was apparently, like, interviewing offensive coordinators and stuff, like, right before he went and told the team that he was leaving. So I don't think
more so that's
true.
I think that he just wanted to leave Alabama in good hands because I think he loves that program and he's forever going to be synonymous with that program. Like, he won a title at LSU, but when you look back at Nick Saban, nobody's ever going to remember that he coached there. Just like Bear Bryant, nobody remembers that he coached at Kentucky.
True. But a quick side note, my disdain for LSU has grown like so much that we can't say that on the pocket anymore. We just got to call them the Tigers. That's the new thing. Just the Tigers. All right, so the last thing I said, the Super Bowl, who do you got, even if you're not going to watch?
I got the Chiefs.
It's because I made the Bills joke. It's because I made the Bills joke.
You're going Niners, obviously, right?
I think Christian McCaffrey becomes a Super Bowl MVP tomorrow.
I could see it.
Oh, or Mr. Irrelevant becomes Super Bowl MVP.
That would be a hell of a story.
That would be crazy. But and actually, that leads me into something here. Let's talk about this, because this is something that doesn't get talked about enough, and I feel like people need to. I think that Matt Campbell is very overrated as a head coach. I think Breece Hall, Brock Purdy, and Matt Campbell, they should have done a lot more than they did together.
See, I disagree because it's Iowa State. It's all about perspective and, you know, what program you're at. If you have those guys and you're at in Oklahoma where you're probably going to have other guys around you, like he took Iowa State from being irrelevant. They were Kansas bad for a long time. And Campbell came in and made them relevant and national championship contenders at one point. They never made a playoff, but they were a top 10 team that was really putting threats into people in the Big 12.
Okay, so let me rephrase that question then, because I do want to talk about Matt Campbell a little bit, and just because I like hearing other people's opinions about things, because sometimes I get in these little like tunnel vision moods. Do you think Matt Campbell has sacrificed a little bit of his own career staying at Iowa State for so long? You think he should have left when they left?
Yes, he should have left 2 or 3 years ago.
To just for anywhere else to have like a little bit more resources and not Iowa State?
Not necessarily anywhere else, but I don't think Iowa State's ever going to be a consistent threat to win a title. Like, I think we saw the ceiling of them in what was it, 2018, 2019.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. I think he should have left. So we could end this episode here. I have two podcast questions from Twitter. One.
I have something for you first, actually, because
let's hear it.
Now that I'm thinking about this, we should have brought this up earlier. We talked about Chip Kelly leaving UCLA, but we never talked about candidates for the UCLA job. So who do you think should get that?
That's a great question. I'm not too sure.
Candidates, I have one name that definitely should not get that.
Okay. Who is it?
One of my absolute favorite coaches and one of your least favorite coaches, PJ Fleck.
I thought you were going to say Ryan Day.
I absolutely love PJ Fleck. You know that. I've defended him for years. That is square peg, round hole. That's not going to work. I just don't think he's a West Coast guy, and I really don't think his personality fits in a place like L.A.
A PJ fraud billboard would look so good in L.A.
Dude, what's wrong with you?
No. I agree with you. I saw someone suggest Pete Carroll. I think that's ridiculous. I also saw Tommy Reese as a suggestion.
That'll work.
The one that I've seen that I like a lot, actually, if he wants to get back into coaching, is David Shaw.
Yeah, he's that would be a great hire, I think. If he did things at Stanford with academic restrictions that are crazy. If you put him in a place like UCLA and he's, again, fit, he fits there. He knows California. That would be a really good hire, I think. There were times where Stanford, with all of their academic restrictions, were out-recruiting and outplaying USC. And it wasn't like they were just outplaying them in games. They were smoking USC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. I like David Shaw as the hire, actually, now that I think about it. He knows what it's like to be at a program with severe limitations. All right, that's number one. You know, Stanford had big limitations. Of course, they were in the pack, so there were other teams that just were flat out not very good. The big's going to be a little tougher, but he'll be able to mitigate, like I said, some of those shortcomings that UCLA has. And he's a good fit. His son's also on the football team. He's a sophomore.
I'll throw another name out there that I think is a long shot that's not going to happen if he wants to get back into coaching, Chris Peterson.
Ooh, I like that.
I don't think he's going to want to come back into coaching, but if he does, that would be a home run hire, I think.
Yeah, that would be a great hire. I feel like you're right. It has to be a West Coast guy. I feel like there has to be someone who cares about the program. That's what this program really needs right now. Someone who just gets UCLA.
Yes, definitely. Bring back Rick Neuheisel.
I don't hate it. So our questions here we have here on X. First one is from Trey Cochran. When will Michigan State finish in the top half of the new Big Ten? I'm going to pull up the Big Ten again just so we could see the teams and we could just determine where the half is.
That's an interesting question. I don't think that's going to happen overnight. I think we're looking maybe the later half of the decade, which realistically
is in front of some of these teams.
It's only 2024. Like, the later half of the decade is only 3 years away, 4 years away. But no, I think there's just so many things going on within that program that have to be fixed, and a lot of them are kind of out of Jonathan Smith's control. I think they can fit ahead of Indiana, finish ahead of Maryland. Maryland's good, but they recruit good, but they're so not dependable. Finish ahead of Minnesota, probably Northwestern, Purdue, and Rutgers. And that puts them right at what, like eight? Yeah, sorry, dude.
What?
I said maybe. That puts them at 8 or 9 in the new Big Ten, which that's not where they want to be. That's not top half yet.
So I was going to say that Terps guy in the Discord is going to be very upset about your Maryland slander, but I'm just fuming at the Rutgers take. But I actually agree with you. I think Jonathan Smith, so I'm an Oregon guy as well, and boy, does Jonathan Smith teams piss me off. They're so well coached. They're so well disciplined. He's a great head coach. So I actually am okay with you saying that because he is going to elevate this program. He's not Mel Tucker. He's all about football, and they're going to be a good team. I actually think that they're also going to be better than UCLA. It's a team you left out in there. I think regardless of who they hire, Jonathan Smith is going to be better than what they do.
Yeah, and I was just about to say about Maryland, one of their biggest problems is their schedule, because every year they were playing Penn State, Michigan, and Ohio State. And even during that little stretch where Michigan State was good, like right there is pretty much 3 guaranteed losses every year. And I was going to say how that's a good thing that now the schedule's changed. There's no more conferences or no more divisions within the conference. Mm-hmm. So they have an easier schedule, right? Wrong.
Yeah.
Wrong. They host USC, they go to Oregon, and they still have to play Penn State.
You're right again,
back to 3 guaranteed losses.
Get ready to play in the Bahama Bowl, buddy. Yeah, so that's good. We have 2 questions here that we kind of touched on, but I'll start with this one. So this is actually probably should have went in the beginning of the episode, but this is from Will is Chill. Will Kyle McCord face a drop in production with statistically worse receivers at Syracuse?
It depends what you mean by drop in production. Like, will his numbers specifically go down? Yes, but I don't think by much. Like, I don't think he's going to throw more interceptions. He might throw less touchdowns. But then again, let me pull up the Syracuse schedule and see what we got here.
I can pull it up if you want. That way everyone can see it. but while we talk about it, I know you're probably gonna pull up on your phone anyway, but I'll pull it up here just so we can. And now what I think about it, I think the yards will go down just because, let's be honest, I'm not saying Syracuse receivers are bad, but the ones that Ohio State had last year probably could have been on NFL teams last season. So, okay, this will probably be a blowout for Syracuse. Win, Ohio. Georgia Tech, that's kind of a tough one.
No, looking at this, I you know what? I don't think his numbers are going to go down. And I think even if they stay roughly the same, his perception could change because of, like you said, there's, and this isn't a knock on Syracuse, but it's going to sound like one. There's less talent at Syracuse than there is at Ohio State right now. It's just a fact. But McCord, I think, is a guy that could take some of those guys and make them that much better. So, no, looking at the schedule, I don't really think that he's going to have too much of a drop-off, if at all. I don't think he's going to throw more than 7 or 8 interceptions. And we could be looking at, am I crazy for saying 9-10 win Syracuse this year?
I was just about to say that. This schedule is very soft. I see 2 tough games, maybe 3. This is a tough game. At Carter, Finley is always a tough game. They get real rowdy down there. Would love to make it. Virginia Tech, but that's a home game. And honestly, I think those are the 2 hardest. I don't think this is a very hard game for them.
See, and again, everything always goes back with schedules to timing. You know what game I'm looking at is one that is very scary to me?
Cal. Okay.
Because they're going to play at a very physical Boston College, who even if they're not good, they're going to beat you up. Especially on the offensive line, they're going to beat you up. And then Syracuse has to travel across the country, which is something they're not really used to Cal to play a team that I don't really know what they're going to look like this year. But I think that could be tough, and that could be a game where they kind of slip up a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think anyone is going to be used to this across the country thing. So that could mean that Cal game is very – I mean, this UConn game might be a sleeper game as well. But
yeah, coming off of a road trip to California, that might be another one.
Yeah, you know, you don't know how jet lagged they're going to be. And they said that's after a physical week at Boston College. Might be a rough November. I'm not always a fan of looking at a schedule and just saying win, win, loss, loss, because who knows what happens injury-wise and off-the-field stuff here. But I do think this could be an 8 or 9 win season for Syracuse.
Yeah, and if it is, I think a lot of it's going to be because of Kyle McCord. He's going to make a big difference in that program.
Yeah. So the last question we will take here is from 1785 Dog, Georgia Bulldog guy here, and Seattle Mariner enthusiast. What is Jamie Franklin's future at Penn State? Will he be able to get them over the hump with big wins against Michigan and Ohio State? So I have a gripe with this question right now because this is an SEC guy. And there's the Big Ten is going away from divisions, as everyone should know. And everyone keeps saying, well, can he beat Michigan? Can he beat Ohio State? They do not play Michigan this season. They don't play them. So they don't have to beat Michigan. They only play Ohio State this year. I think this is not the toughest schedule for them. It is kind of tough, though. I love this West Virginia team. Neil Brown has kind of changed my mind about him. I thought he was a bum. He's off the bum seat. I'm just real blunt today. I don't know. I always felt mad about that hire. But last season, his offensive line was really good. And I was like actually starting to see like, okay, maybe this guy could turn it around. So I actually am I'm kind of on the Neil Brown boat at this point. At USC is going to be kind of tough for them. And then at Wisconsin, and then they have Ohio State at home in Washington. This is a tough 4-game stretch. I'll say that.
Yeah, and you passed over Illinois, who I really think it's only a matter of time. I think it's really only a matter of time before we see them start to become what Wisconsin was 10 years ago. Where they might not be a Rose Bowl contender, but they're going to run the ball, they're going to be physical, they're going to beat you down, and they might be a 10-win team. I really think that's coming for Illinois, and it's just a matter of time. I'm not sure if this year's going to be the year, but if it is, that's right before UCLA, which is right before USC, and that's going to be a brutal, 6-game stretch before you come out with 3 games that you should win. No, to answer your question, I don't think he beats Ohio State this year. What is his future at Penn State? I think he's going to stay there for a little bit longer because, especially seeing within your conference, what happens when you fire a consistent 9-game winner? Look at Nebraska. I don't think Penn State wants to become that. So I think Franklin stays there a little bit longer until his first, like, the first opportunity they get to fire him after a 7-win season. I think that's when it happens.
So I completely agree with you there, unfortunately, because obviously I have a little soft spot for Penn State. I go to the Whiteout every year, the last three. I think if you fire him, you're really risking falling out of the top part of this conference. Right now, I mean, you haven't gotten over the hump, but you're right at the, I'd say, like, almost at the peak of the hump. You know, you're almost there. You're not quite there. I'm not sure if they'll get over it. But if you fire James Franklin, how far do you set yourself back is the question.
Yeah, and we joke about the James Franklin-Ryan Day comparisons, but if you really think about it, James Franklin pretty much is Ryan Day, except with one more team in front of him. It's not just Michigan. It's Ohio State as well. Those are the teams he's got to get over the hump with.
I don't know about that. I think James Franklin had to do a little bit more work to get where he was at. I mean, Penn State was good, but I don't know. I feel like he's done more than Ryan Day has.
But no, Ryan Day can make a playoff. I agree with you there. But again, why are we talking about James Franklin? Why are we talking about his job security? Because he can't beat Michigan and Ohio State. Why are we talking about Ryan Day's job security? Because he can't beat Michigan.
I see the comparison there.
It's the same thing, except Penn State has one more team in front of them.
Yeah, this was a disappointing season for Penn State. I mean, these losses were – it's the same thing. I mean, look, they – that's – but – oh, my God, I'm stumbling over my words so bad right now. I'm sorry. But like I said, if what you're saying too is if you fire this guy, you risk – I mean, look, teams that are not Ohio State or Michigan – they play pretty damn well, like 38-15, 30-13, 31-0, 41-13. Like, they play good, but it's just these two teams they can't beat. It's Ohio State and Michigan.
Yeah, and especially looking back, how good does that win over West Virginia look now?
Yeah, I mean...
And I get it. Everybody's going to say, well, that was early in the year. It'd be different now if they played. Okay, well, if that's going to be your arguments, then why do we even play in September? Why don't we just pack 12 games into November? You know,
yeah, those games matter. I do dislike that. People are like, oh, it's not the same team as the beginning of the season. Yeah, but no one is. Right? The injuries happen. Players get better over time. Players get worse over time.
Exactly.
So yeah, no, I hate that argument as well. People just say, oh, well, it was in this date. But well, that's when the season starts.
And even an FCS team in Delaware. Yes, it's FCS. Yes, Penn State should beat Delaware every year. Delaware was an FCS playoff team, so they were no slouch.
And they blew the doors off them.
Yeah, they handled them easily.
And this, too, this was a top defense in the country that got dismantled.
Yes.
31-0. Iowa, I believe I was at this game. I don't believe Iowa crossed midfield to the fourth quarter.
Yep.
So that was also a dismantling of Iowa. Does James Franklin get over the hump, though? That is the question. Honestly, it pains me to say I don't think he does.
I don't think so, and I think it comes down to if he can grab any of the guys from California. If he can start recruiting California better than a team like Ohio State, then yes. But it in the foreseeable future, it doesn't look like it.
All right. So two more just came in. We could take these or we could stop. Up to you. I know you're on a bit of a time.
Nah, dude, let's keep going.
All right, so the last two, because I felt like that was a little short. Vinny Spazzali, who will be more successful, Jonathan Smith at Michigan State or Jed Fish at Washington?
That's an interesting question with both of them still in the same conference, which is another weird thing to say, Washington and Michigan State in the same conference. I kind of think Jonathan Smith is the better coach, but I think Jed Fish will be more successful, if that makes any sense. Because I think Jonathan Smith being in Michigan, you're close to geographically, you're close to other Big Ten teams. Can he regularly beat and out recruit Michigan? Can he regularly out recruit Ohio State, even Penn State? Whereas if you look at Jed Fish at Washington, his top competition out there is going to be Oregon and USC. Is UCLA going to be a factor? I don't really know. We kind of touched on that earlier. But I would kind of lead Jed Smith here. Or Jed Fish. Wow, I don't know where that came from.
I'm glad you said that. I'm going to take the opposite. I think Jonathan Smith is more successful. But in relative terms to their program goals, I think Washington is at a point where they're trying to get back to the playoff. I don't think it's going to be that easy to do for Jed Fish at Washington. I have confidence eventually he will get them there. I'm not sure it's going to be this season. So I think in the first few years, Jonathan Smith just getting Michigan State back to where, you know, they're a respectable program, I think he'll be more successful in his program goals.
I think, unfortunately, a lot of Jonathan Smith's success at Michigan State is going to be dictated by how Michigan does in the recruiting trail.
So you think that they have to just be better than Michigan to think that's pretty much what you're saying?
Yes.
Or Michigan has to be down for Michigan State to be good.
Yes, because look at those few years where Michigan State was a true top team in the nation. A lot of it had to do with the fact that Michigan was down at that point. And for that matter, so was Penn State at that time.
Was that the Brady Hoke years? I think it was, right? It was.
Yeah.
Hoke, yeah. Okay, that was a sad time for Michigan.
Exactly.
But I love every time, well, when Harbaugh left, I kept tweeting pictures of Brady Hoke saying, bring him back, Michigan man. And everyone was getting really pissed. Someone just said, I tweeted like 2 a.m. and he said, bro, stop. Like, he was just so the last question is 229 Boomer Sooner. Will Bill O'Brien succeed at BC? We got a lot of these questions just at succeed. But what is succeed in this?
I think it goes back to succeed as relative to the program. And I think Boston College is a team where for the better part of the last, 20 years that I can remember, going back to the Jeff Jagosinski days, it seemed like, yeah, there were outlier years, but like their floor is 5 wins and their ceiling is 7-8 if you include the bowl game, which that's pretty good. I think he can succeed there. I don't know if he's going to make them a playoff team. Uh-huh. But I also don't know if Boston College really wants to invest enough money to be a playoff team.
And that's what it comes down to. I will say, just looking relative to their schedule this season, might be a rough year in Boston College. This is a brutal schedule, in my opinion. I don't know if you could see it here, if you want to pull it up for yourself. But this is brutal. This is brutal.
Rough.
Florida State and then at Mizzou. This is a tough 2 away games to open the season. You better hope you beat the Dukes by 40 because the vibes are going to be down in the locker room after these 2 games.
Even Western Kentucky, like, that's not a pushover team.
No, that's a team that's going to love to throw the ball. You better be ready to stop it. Virginia's kind of a weak team off and then at Virginia Tech. This is a rough start to the year.
And I see another team on there who I think I told you is a dark horse playoff contender to me, and that's SMU.
Yep, yeah, and that's at SMU as well. Yeah, now that I'm looking at this is a terrible schedule to have as your first season.
Yeah, that's really just not friendly at all.
So this is their 2025 schedule.
You should start 2-0 in 2025, so you got that to look forward to.
Yeah, but then this is a tough I don't know. I think he'll be successful. I think Bill O'Brien is a great coach, but it's just like you said, I don't think Boston College wants to be a playoff team. I think they're cool being a bowl eligible team every 3 or 4 years, having upperclassmen and getting like 7 or 8 wins. So I think Bill O'Brien can do that, though. He's a phenomenal football coach.
Yeah, and I think firing Jeff Jagosinski in, what was that, 2008, was the worst move that program ever made. He had them at number 2 in the country at one point, and they just haven't really recovered since then.
So now people were going to question my credibility here, but I was 9 when that happened, so I wasn't really following.
I was only 14. It was because he interviewed for, I believe it was an NFL job, and the athletic director told him, don't do it or we're going to fire you. Yeah, don't do it or we're going to fire you. And then he did it, and then they fired him, and now you got what you got.
Okay, so that's crazy. But was that the Matt Ryan and Luke Kuechly years, or was that after?
Matt Ryan was 2007. That was during that insane year where, like, South Florida reached number 2. Kansas and Missouri was a game to rank for who was going to be number 1 the next week. 2007 was an insane year. We should do a show on that sometime.
Dude, I would so be, we should all right, we should be able to do that. Let's do like season recaps. That'd be pretty all right, cool all right. for some. But yeah, I think that about wraps it up. So today is the 10th. I'm gonna put this out later today. Maybe we will revisit on the 24th. We'll do another episode. So two Saturdays.
Yeah, sounds great.
All right. Well, thank you guys for listening. You can find us on Apple Podcast, Spotify, and YouTube. Sonny, anything else you want to leave with?
Yeah, just a general thing here. If you're a fan of college sports and you just love the passion of the games, two of the most underrated college sports just started, and that is lacrosse and softball. If you, like I said, if you like the passion, those are two of the absolute best that you could watch. College softball has been growing. It's so entertaining. Their season just started on Thursday. I highly suggest you watch them. Oklahoma is the Alabama of college softball. They won three straight national championships. They went 61-1 last year. If you're tired of Alabama, Oklahoma is your villain to watch there. And I think they win it again this year in college lacrosse. I think Notre Dame wins a championship again this year. Another great game. I got Virginia and Michigan on right now. Give those sports a shot. A lot of fun.
Yeah. So the last thing I want to say now that you brought that up is it is almost time. The next episode, we're going to be able to say, this is March. That's what we're going to say. So that's going to be a great college sport.
Talk about college basketball. This is March, and we're only about 3 months away from College Football Preview magazines coming out.
Exactly. All right, Sonny. Well, I hope you have a great rest of your Saturday. I'll try to get this out soon.
Sounds great. Thank you, man. Thank you guys for listening.